Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us to the end of the week. It's Friday the 13th of August and this is Game On. Coming up today, Super Thursday didn't come to pass, but Shamrock Rovers got the business done. We ask Alan Cawley, how far can Stephen Bradley's side go?
Diagonal ball over the head of Scales. Ah, it's beautifully done by Liam Scales. Really calm.
Just losing confidence at the minute, isn't he, Scales?
Really is, and he's continued his run forward, Scales. Clever ball inside as well. A chance for number two for Gaffney, who's done it.
It's All-Ireland football. It's All-Ireland semi-final weekend. Barry Cahill is with us. Mayo take on Dublin, who will be dreaming of a start as good as this.
133rd All-Ireland football final getting underway. And straight away, it's James McCarthy trying to set Dublin going, and he takes the return ball here. What a start this will be. What a start this is in the back of the net.
Jane Mangan marks our card ahead of the weekend's action, most of which is overseas, but Jane has it covered.
Barbara Bruce sent 24-7. It's Century Dream. Here comes Cacho and DA between horses. On the outside is Almanar, and here's Robert Bruce, who's charged up to the lead. It's Robert Bruce. Robert Bruce has won the million from Almanar.
Fergal Brennan joins Alan to preview the Premier League action. Will City repeat last year's heroics?
A medal for Fernandinho setting up the trophy lift itself. In dark times for us all, they have re-emerged as by far football's brightest light. A Premier League season like no other, and Manchester City are the champions.
If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, Alan Cawley is here with me. Alan, I think we were all really looking forward to last night. It didn't go to plan, but there were still plenty of positives to take away from it. And let's start with Shamrock Rovers, because they have progressed. They had a 2-0 victory over 2-8, and I think everybody was expecting them after their first performance, their first leg performance, to go out and get the job done. But they were quite impressive.
Very impressive, Maria. I think you're right in what you said, and we kind of predicted this. Out of the three teams going into the games last night, they did have the best chance. Hence the fact that obviously coming through the route that they came through, dropping down from the Champions League, it was always going to be the best route. And that's why obviously Bohemians and Dundalk faced stiffer competition, because they came through the normal kind of finishing third or fourth in the league kind of route. So the fact that they had the best route favoured them with the opposition that they got, the Albanian team. And from watching them in the first leg, they were very impressive the first leg, even though it was a late goal that they scored, the young lad coming on at 17 years of age, and it was a late goal. I still felt going into the game last night, they were so dominant in the first leg that I had huge belief in the fact that they get the job done. And again, very comprehensive win last night, winning 2-0 over there. Good performance, sets them up now for obviously the next round, the playoff round against Flora Tallinn. And I give them a great chance as well, Marie. And I did give them a great chance in the sense that, because again, as I go back to the route that they came and dropping down out of the Champions League, they were the best placed to obviously get into the, hopefully, the group stages. Now they've given themselves that opportunity with a one-off game next week against Flora Tallinn, and if they come through that, they will achieve that and get into the Conference League group stages, which would be a hell of an achievement. Unbelievable money, as we've already remarked, Marie, when you think of the money that Bohemians and Dundalk have gotten through for getting through two and three rounds. If Shamrock Rovers were to achieve that and get to the group stage, I think they're guaranteed near 2.9 million
or something. 2.9 million if they get the group stages, and they have approximately got 1.5 million for their progress so far.
Yeah.
And look, we were actually speaking off air a little bit about how Shamrock Rovers are operating, what they're doing right, and how they are developing a template for the way club in the League of Ireland can be run successfully as businesses. But 2.9 million for any club, if they get there, is absolutely massive. And given what they've been able to do so far, you can only imagine what they'll be able to do with that money in terms of development.
Absolutely, yeah. It's astronomical money in League of Ireland terms, and game-changing money as well, Marie, to be fair to them. And they've been earning that kind of money over the last 2, 3, 4 years. Obviously a lot of investment went into Roadstone, as you see with the academy now behind them, and they're doing great work and great things there, and good luck to them. You can't fault them for that. They're doing things properly, they're doing things right, whether people like them or not. They're the champions, they're there on merit, they've done a great job. Obviously Stephen Bradley has a lot of resources at his disposal, but if you're the manager of that club and you're successful, of course you're going to have the resources. It's up to him then to deliver on that, and the players that he signed, the players that he's brought in. Obviously Richie Cowell has been a huge addition. He's in that, he is in that position that he is able to get the best players. It's okay getting the best players, but then you have to obviously be able to gel them as a team and as a squad and achieve things. They're top of the league as well, which you would expect, but you still have to go out and deliver and do that. And even in this round now, as you say, coming through the European route that they're doing at the moment, even though we had full belief in the fact that they would get through, and they should be getting through, really, I think, when because of the opposition that they were playing against, you still have to go out and deliver on that. There was probably a little bit of pressure on them last night, but they played ever so well. Comprehensive win 2-0, and I give them a great chance of going through now to the group stages, Marie.
Another thing that Stephen Bradley is doing is he's really bringing the best out of his players and putting them in a shop window and making them attractive prospects to bigger clubs, and one of them is Liam Scales. And I think if you even just looked at his performance last night, he has been linked with Celtic in a previous press conference as well. Stephen Bradley said that there has been interest from a Premier League club, maybe even more than one clubs, but when you think of what he was able to do last night on the biggest stage, knowing that there's people looking at him, a lot of credit goes to both Liam Scales and Stephen Bradley, really.
Yeah, of course. And I think, to be fair to the league as well, in general, different from when I was playing in it, Maria, was a makeup of kind of older senior pros and the young lads, maybe the odd good young lad coming through. If you look around all the squads now, it's a very youthful orientated league. It's young fellas everywhere playing, and obviously with Shamrock Rovers they probably have the best of those young fellas. But the huge advantage for young players now playing in the league, and especially when they get onto the European stage, is that there's people tuning in from everywhere to obviously seeking to pick up a player or two. Now, with the advantage of obviously the underage leagues as well and the academy, Shamrock Rovers have already sold one or two through that route. But if you were to come in, and I often have this debate and this discussion with former players. In my time, the norm was that lads used to go away 15, 16 years of age. And as I say, that was the norm. And you'd have bucket loads of lads going over to England. Back then, you were competing against the likes of the home nation. So you would be England, Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales and ourselves. And the good ones would always come true. But it was a very difficult road to go down as well. I think the route that lads are going over now, because obviously it's so... It's the world over. Like, players or clubs in England now are bringing players in from the world over, as I say. So it's much harder for young lads now. Hence why you don't see so many going away. Hence why it's another massive opportunity for us to keep lads here through the underage system with the likes of those clubs, as we've already outlined, to go on and play in the first team, to be on that stage like the likes of Scales at the moment, or we saw Jack Byrne last year, McAniff, or some of the young lads that are coming through, the likes of Ross Tierney, Dawson Devoy, Bose. And if they play 50 games to 100 games here, and then they're going into a first team environment, Marie, I think that's far better suited for young lads now to go down that road, rather than going away 15, 16 and being gobbled up by the system over there and ending up coming home here 2 or 3 years later disillusioned with football. So that's the huge advantage that the league can give to young players now, and it's a huge advantage for the league and people from outside in terms of us asking for investment into league and for people to be serious about the league here, because what it can offer for young lads. And also, the knock-on effect is that if you've young lads eventually coming through here that can go on and play in England with bigger clubs or Scotland or even across Europe, wherever the case may be, eventually these lads will come through and go on and play with the national team. So it's one big knock-on effect the whole way through, Marie. And that's why we're always, people might say, you sound like a broken record when you're trying to almost, and I wouldn't say playing the victim card, but when we're always just looking for a bit of help and a bit of investment and a bit of people to tune in and say, look, there's good things happening here. We need the help from everybody, a bit of joined up thinking from everybody, that we're all kind of singing off the same hymn sheet, that'll eventually put the league on a standing that it should be on, because there's still the perception out there, Marie, that people look down their noses at the league. And for us who were involved in it for such a long time, I know exactly what the league can offer, lads. We're seeing that now. To see three teams at the third round stage like we saw last night, and not only there just on by chance, they were there on merit. They played unbelievable in the games. It was much more difficult, obviously, for Bohemians playing against Pauk because of the resources, and obviously Dundalk against Vitesse. But they ran them right to the death. Both teams were absolutely brilliant. Not in a one-off game as well, Marie, in two-legged ties, and they ran them so close. So that's a hell of an achievement for the clubs at the moment, and it's something that hopefully they can build on. But certainly for Shamrock Rovers, as I say, they're probably on a different footing at the moment, and good luck to them next week against Flora Tallinn, and hopefully they can get into the group stage.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting as well in a few years to see the players that do come through those National League teams as well, because players are staying at home. And I know I gave a shout out yesterday to the Temple Oak boys, but they are listening again. They lost to Shamrock Rovers in the final in Belfast today, 2-1, but they're big Game On fans, they say. So hello lads, Alan Cawley, give them a shout out.
Yeah, absolutely. You're filling us in here, Marie. We're seeing videos and all sorts of celebrations, and that's what it's all about. And the likes of of those young fellas, rather than looking, I know obviously it's so.
But they aspire to play for Shamrock
Rovers. Of course. As I say, I told you the story last week where I brought the young lad into the Aviva and he was looking at Georgie Kelly like he was a Premier League player or Keith Buckley or Dawson Devoy. And that's what we need, Marie, for our young players playing in the league to be seen as stars and to be viewed as stars. The same way as the Gaelic players, you bring a young fella into Croke Park, he wants to be the next Bernard Brogan or Dean Rock or whoever the case may be, or the hurling. We want the same for our league. And it's so achievable. This is the thing. It's so achievable.
I mentioned to Conan yesterday, you know, those young lads are seeing the likes of Richie Towell just hanging around. You know what I mean? He's around the Temple Oak area. They're seeing him. They know he plays for Shamrock Rovers. They're going down to Shamrock Rovers or to Tallaght Stadium on a Friday night. And the player that they want to be when they grow up is right there amongst them, and that is so important. And I know we're talking quite a lot about young players, but the league is a place for the older players as well, and that showed last night with Rory Gaffney, 31, getting the two goals.
Yeah, well, there's the odd one still flying the flag for, yeah, but it is predominantly young. But Rory has obviously been here, gone to England, and now he's come back and again scored two great goals last night, obviously the first one, the little chip, and he's performed a lot better in recent weeks. I think that's a problem position, and it has been for Shamrock Rovers, the centre forward with Aaron Green and him. And I often think, I wonder why Stephen Bradley didn't go out and get a top quality one. But to be fair to Gaffney in the last weeks, and I was at the game Sunday against Longford, he has played a lot better in recent weeks, and those two goals proved it last night. A brilliant return for him. And even on the Scales thing, I saw Scales last Sunday as well. Liam Scales, a great player, Marie. He'd be well capable of going over playing with Celtic as well, and hopefully that'll be the case for them. Again, that brings in huge money, and I think that's another thing with the league as well, Marie. We're trying to get the league on a footing that if our young players do go away, that the clubs are getting the proper money that they should be getting for a player. Not like years ago when players were going away for peanuts. They should be getting the proper money that if they are going away, that obviously the clubs are getting the value for what they're worth.
We have a text in. Tell Alan that they hadn't got the best route. They had a very easy route. I presume that's around Shamrock Rovers.
He's obviously not a Shamrock Rovers fan. But you could say it's easy, but they're there on merit. The reason they had the easy route, Marie, is because they won the league last year. So if you win the league last year, that gets you to that route. That gets you to being afforded losing a game in the Champions League and dropping down into the Europa League. So whoever that supporter, even though he might be right, whoever he supports, if their team wins the league, they'll be going through the same route themselves. And I think we have to be realistic about our teams as well. If we want to get to a group stage, now the Conference League has slightly changed things as well, Marie, because it's given all our teams a chance to get to a group stage, but I still think the best route is obviously you win the league and you drop down, because Shamrock Rovers got a bye in the second round and then they face the Albanian team, and here they are now obviously with a one off game to get into a group stage.
Now I know you were watching the other games as well. A difficult night really for Bows, because they were close, and you know the first half was tough enough, but they rallied in the second half and nearly forced the game to extra time.
They absolutely did, Marie. Yeah, they died with their boots on, as you would expect, to be fair to them, because they're a brilliant bunch of lads, young fellas as well, fearless, but they give everything that they have, and they're brilliant. That's one thing that Keith Long has done over the last 4 or 5 years that he's been there. Not only has he an eye for bringing young players through or lads that come back from England and assembling a team and a squad, he's built an unbelievable spirit and camaraderie amongst the lads as well, and that's the one thing you get no matter what Bohemians team you watch. So looking at them last night, even though they went down 2-0 at half time, it would have been easy for their heads to drop, but as you say, to come out in the second half, had a right go, obviously Wardy's chance at the end, Keith Ward, and of all the players, he'd be the one you'd nearly wanted to fall to, because technically he's so good. But and I feel for him, because there was obviously people maybe suggesting a bit of criticism towards his way, but he's been a brilliant servant to Bohemians. And to be fair, as I said, Marie, I think the first two rounds Bohemians getting through was the achievement. Going up against Pauk, I think it's 50-60 million of a wage bill. Like, it's phenomenal, really, the resources that they were competing against and that they were playing against. So it was always going to be a tough ask. Again, the beat Pauk on merit in the Aviva last week. But I have to be honest, the last 10 or 15 minutes, you could just see them beginning to flag a little bit. And they were hanging on in the first leg. And I always felt last night was going to be difficult. I think it was 33 degrees heat as well. So that was up. That was another thing that was against them. But they gave an unbelievable good account of themselves. The problem for Bohemians now, Marie, and it goes back to obviously they're playing with Sligo Rovers on Sunday now, they have a huge game, because they're in a position now, I think they're fourth in the league, that they might not get into Europe next year. And when you think of the summer it's been over the last 4, 5, 6 weeks of them playing in Europe every week and the fans and everybody getting on board and a brilliant story for us to tell, wouldn't it be such a shame if that team doesn't qualify for Europe? So I think they have to let that go now, what happened last night, and focus heavily now on the remaining games. They have a huge cup tie as well against Shamrock Rovers to look forward to, so they've lots to play for. But I think it's so imperative with the team that they have, with the quality that they have, because there's so much quality in young players, that they get through and qualify and get themselves into Europe again for next year and build on what they've achieved already.
The same goes for Dundalk as well. Quite a similar situation, very close to beating Vitesse last night and progressing, but they're in a similar situation then when it comes to the league.
Yeah, I think they're in a worse position, to be honest with you, Marie. And to be fair to Vinny, since he's gone back in, he's rejuvenated them a little bit and got them back towards some sort of a semblance of what we knew Dundalk were in the league. But they still have a huge ask to try and get into Europe. But looking at them in the European games over the last number of weeks, they've been absolutely brilliant. And again, the last night, they'll be kicking themselves, Marie. Such an opportunity missed, because they gave away two sloppy goals. The first one, to be fair to them, it was just a deflection, and that can happen, and it dropped kindly for the centre forward, and he obviously put it in. They were really unlucky. But the second one, defensively, they got it so wrong, Nadishtad and Andy Boyle, and one of them was sitting in and one of them was still trying to hold a high line, and obviously the lad went through for Vitesse and buried it. And a 2-0, such a sucker punch of a goal, 2-0 at half time. I felt it was game over at half time because of the concession of that second goal. They were absolutely brilliant in the second half, Marie. They ran them so close. Mickey Duffy was brilliant on the wing. They had such chances. And I'm sure they woke up this morning, and I'm sure Vinny himself, they'll be looking back thinking such a missed opportunity. But as you say, there's been a lot of off the field issues with Dundalk this year. It's so important that they just get back on track, try and finish as high up the table in the league. They still have the FEI Cup as well. But they have to, with the wages they're paying out as well, they have to be in Europe, Marie.
The texter has sent it back in another message. He or she is a Finn Harps fan.
Finn Harps have a long way to go to get into Europe, unfortunately, I'm afraid. But yeah, look, I think the Finn Harps fans, like all the other fans, are probably not too kind towards Shamrock Rovers. But that's what happens as well when you're winning the league and you're best. But I would agree with the fact that they got the easy route, but I go back to the point, the reason they had the easy route was because they won the league.
Okay, Alan, let's take a very quick break, and then we're going to look ahead to the All-Ireland semi-final between Dublin and Mayo with Barry Cowell. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. I'm in studio with Alan Cawley, and we're joined now on the line by former Dublin player Barry Cowell. Barry, huge game tomorrow, and it's such an intriguing one because there are so many questions hanging over Dublin, which we're not used to. But first of all, let's just give a little bit of a mention to how big a rivalry is. It's the 10th time that these two have met in championships since 2012. And we spoke to Austin O'Malley about it last night, and just how great it is to have such a brilliant rivalry between two teams.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been the standout rivalry over the last 10 years. If you talk to any current Dublin footballers or anyone that recently retired, they always felt that Mayo was the big game of the year, who really pushed them a number of times in All-Ireland semi-finals and finals to the absolute brink. A couple of games going to replays, games being won in injury time, extra time, all that type of stuff. So, yeah, it's been a phenomenal rivalry over the last 10 years. And, you know, Dublin have been so very dominant in those games, league and particularly in the championship. But, you know, a number of those games could have went either way if there was a bounce of a ball in between it. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes tomorrow evening.
Yeah, and there are some question marks over Dublin, really. I guess, Look, they're a team in transition. There's no getting away from it. You know, there's the big names that we're used to are no longer there, and Desi is trying to put his own stamp on it, and he's starting to do that. But I guess the question marks really are over form. And when you see big players maybe not reaching the highs that we're used to, is it hard not to get worried?
Yeah, it's a little concerning. Certainly there's been a lot of attention on the Dublin setup over the last few weeks, which is something that's completely new to this group of players, because usually they've been very good at keeping any attention or any heat from them. But yeah, certainly a couple of their key players haven't been hitting the heights of the last number of years. Now, we got to put a bit of perspective on this in terms of they're, you know, absolutely hitting the highs over the last few years of phenomenal performances, and then a lot of the big knockout games as well. So even though a couple of their key players, maybe the likes of Conor Callaghan and Brian Fenton, haven't been exactly flying during the Leinster Championship, they haven't really needed to be. So that would give me a bit of comfort in that, you know, they are big game players who usually do turn it on when it comes to All-Ireland semi-finals and finals. And those two players in particular have performed at a really high level against the likes of Mayo. So, but I think it'll be interesting because I think there's a bit of a feeling out there in the GAA public that Dublin are that bit more vulnerable at the moment. As you mentioned there, they have lost a number of players due to retirements or step-aways, the likes of Jack McCaffrey and Paul Mannion. And I'm sure Desi Farrell would absolutely love to have those two guys still available to him. But I think the main probably drop-off for Dublin heading into tomorrow is their subs bench. You talk about the Mayo games, how tight they've been over the last 8 to 10 years. It was really their subs bench that did the damage in the last 10 or 15 minutes in those games. Mayo didn't have the firepower on their own bench to match Dublin in that those particular periods. So I think for Dublin going into the game tomorrow and looking maybe at their subs bench over the last two or three games, will they have as strong a team at the end of the game as they will at the start? I'd say you'd probably have to say no. And that hasn't been the case in recent years. Certainly the likes of Merton, Shaw Bugler are proven guys. But a lot of the other guys are very good club players, very good underage players for Dublin, but they haven't really had the experience of those knockout, high tempo, big games in Croke Park, against the likes of a Kerry and Mayo. So they're a little bit untested, and maybe the trust element isn't quite there with a few of them at this particular time. So that maybe gives the Mayo supporters and the Mayo team a little bit of hope in that sense.
Barry, another thing that struck me about this heading into the game was, just as someone that has covered Gaelic games now for quite a number of years, and especially when I think of the Jim Gavin era, just running into big games, running into All-Ireland semi-finals, any championship really, you never really heard anything from the camp. It was just rock solid. Nothing ever got out. If there was any internal issues, strife, we didn't hear about it. Over the last few weeks, there's been Stephen Cluxton stepping away or not stepping away. I don't think anyone is still sure yet. You'd Kev McManaman going to the Olympics. You'd Philly McMahon going with Bose and not being sure when he was going to be coming back. Stuff like that didn't happen when Jim Gavin was there. Is that a concern as well?
A little bit. I mean, certainly the Dublin football camp hasn't been a perfect, harmonious camp over the last few years. There definitely would have been issues going on behind the scenes, I'm sure, that just never got out into the public domain. The same with any, I suppose, top club team or any top county team across Ireland. So, it's maybe just adds a little bit to the uncertainty around it. I think, the likes of Desi Farrell would have loved to have Kevin McManaman for the last month training, four or five times a week. Certainly, Philly McMahon, you'd like him to be around all this week in terms of any tactical analysis. And I think, the likes of Philly could have a big part to play potentially tomorrow, because at some point he maybe needed to mark the likes of Aidan O'Shea. If Aidan O'Shea is moved from around the middle into the full forward line, where he can cause a bit of damage, I think Philly has matched up really well to him in previous years. So, and then you have the thing with Stephen and in goals. But I suppose when looking at it from a goalkeeper perspective, I'd have no concerns around Evan Comfort. I think he's a top-class goalkeeper. I think he's the best goalkeeper left in the championship. He hasn't been involved in too many high-profile knockout games.
He's only going to have started 7 championship games by Saturday. That's not a lot.
It isn't a lot, but I do back him in terms of the training and the preparation that he has had under his belt behind Stephen Cluxton for the last 3 to 4 years. Certainly the spotlight will be on him, and Mayo will really go and put as much pressure as possible on him, and particularly around the kickouts, and put a high press on it. And look, Evan's not going to go out tomorrow and have a perfect game. I mean, Stephen Cluxton never had a perfect game for Dublin. That's completely unrealistic, and there may be a couple of kickouts that go astray, but I wouldn't have any issue with Evan Comfort tomorrow. And I think maybe on the flip side, I think there's probably weaknesses there in the Mayo goalkeeper with David Clark stepping away a couple of years ago. So I think from Dublin's perspective, they'll be looking to try and put the pressure on the Mayo defence and the Mayo goalkeeper in that sense. But yeah, there's no getting away from it. It is a massive game for Evan Comfort. I mean, there won't be 82,000 in Croke Park tomorrow evening, but there certainly will be a big enough crowd to create an atmosphere. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles it.
Really well. And I think as well, there's probably a school of thought out there, and I guess I'd imagine really, or I predict that it'll come to pass, that Dublin, they haven't gone away. They're just going to peak at the right time, and there could be a massive performance in them on Saturday and could answer all of the questions that we have.
Absolutely. I mean, the two guys we mentioned earlier, Brian Fenton, Conor Callaghan, I think probably Kieran Kilkenny, those three are the key players. And, you know, the chances are that they can go out and be peaking for, you know, August time and for the last two remaining championship matches and go out and put in sort of man of the match performances. And I think if those three guys play well tomorrow evening, it's going to be very, very difficult for Mayo to overturn them. They have all that experience and big game. And I think, look, if you look at the four teams left in the championship, I still think Dublin are the team to beat. I think they won the All-Ireland final last year against Mayo relatively comfortably. Like in the last 20 minutes, they were quite comfortable and sort of kept Mayo at that 5 to 6 point gap. You know, possibly that gap has been reduced slightly with the likes of Stephen Cluxton and the subs bench not being quite as strong. From Mayo's perspective, I think they have improved from over the last 8 or 9 months. As you saw in the second half against Galway in the Connacht final, they really were outstanding. But I think they were poor enough in the first half against Galway. Don't really need to put in a 70-75 minute performance tomorrow to beat Dublin. And I think the question mark is, can they get a couple of goals in Killian O'Connor's absence? Yeah, they have some really good forwards who have a lot of potential. But do they have that high sort of quality of killer instinct forwards? I'm not quite sure at the moment, and I think they probably will need a couple of goals tomorrow evening if they are to get over Dublin.
Just on that as well, you know, you mentioned there that Mayo had a really good second half performance against Galway. There was a lot of issues in the first half, and their run in Connacht, they weren't really challenged in the Leitrim game, in the Sligo game, and it just seemed to take them quite a length of time to get up to the pace of Galway. Do you worry that something similar might happen to Dublin? Look, Kildare put up a bit of a challenge, but I don't think Dublin at any stage looked like they weren't going to win.
Yeah, I think probably the second half of the Mead game has been the only real test of Dublin so far. I mean, they won comfortably against Wexford. The Mead game did go down to 2 or 3 points with a few minutes to go, and the Kildare game was really a bit of a non-event, to be honest. You know, Kildare didn't really go for them at any stage during that game. So yeah, there is always that question mark that Leinster doesn't provide the Dublin players with a high attest as possible. You know, the A versus B games has always been beneficial to them, but possibly the B team within the Dublin training sessions aren't quite as strong as they were 2, 3, 4 years ago as well. So they could be a little bit undercooked. But I know, I think the likes of Jim Gavin during his time, and also Desi Farrell last year, they haven't really let a sort of per Leinster championship standard affect them come the knockout game. So I'd be quite confident that the Dublin guys will be well able to go and perform tomorrow, and they won't be certainly using the Leinster Championship as any bit of an excuse if they don't put in a performance tomorrow. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
So you're confident of a performance that would yield a win?
I think so. I think it's going to be very tight. Going into injury time, I can see only 2 or 3 points in it. But I think Dublin will have enough in terms of those big game players. I mean, they still have the likes of a James McCarthy, who's an absolute sort of Rolls Royce of a performer year in, year out. You know, Niall Scully, a really top class player as well, who's come good for them in big games. I think their defence maybe isn't quite as strong as it was a couple of years ago, and they don't have the defensive cover as they had in previous years, and potentially Aidan O'Shea could do a bit of damage with his size and strength inside if James Horan does you know, move him inside. And I think James Horan has done a very good job in terms of building a sort of a really good quality depth amongst the Mayo group, because that wasn't there in previous years, and certainly there's a few more options off the bench. But I think, you know, pound for pound, looking at both squads and maybe the top 20 players that will be on view tomorrow on each team, I can see Dublin just sort of edging it by a couple of points.
Okay, Barry Cahill, thank you so much for joining us. That game is on RTE2 tomorrow from 5 o'clock, so please do check it out.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on 2FM.
Now let's turn our attention to racing. Domestic action comes from the Tramore August Summer Festival, which kicked off at the Waterford Track yesterday and runs until this Sunday. But we are focusing our attention further afield. And to talk us through all of the racing, Jane Mangan joins us. Jane, the flat racing bandwagon rolls into Chicago and Deauville this weekend.
It sure does, yeah. And we're so lucky in this country to be represented across the board at the highest level. And if we talk about the Beverly D and the Arlington Million in Chicago this weekend, Aidan O'Brien has two seriously strong hopes at that meeting. Now, this meeting was one that was lost to COVID last year. It wasn't held in 2020. And Aidan O'Brien has actually never won the Beverly D, but he's got Santa Barbara in there, the recent Belmont Oaks winner. She was highly touted at the start of the season as being his leading classic filly. She was placed in the Guineas and in the Epsom Oaks, but she faces six rivals here in the Beverly D, which is due off at 10:49 p.m. tomorrow night if anybody wants to stay up late. And if anybody wants to stay up later, the Arlington Million goes to post at 13 minutes past midnight Sunday morning. Armory, along with Space Traveller and a couple of other European horses that are of interest, go to post for the Arlington Million. Armory is a Group 2 winner so far in his career, but he has been placed in multiple Group 1s. Can he finally break the ceiling in a race that Aidan O'Brien has won with Cape Blanco and Powers Court in the past?
Right, that adds to a very busy day of sport already on Saturday. So I don't know, Jane, it'll be a tough one to keep going for the whole day. There is racing on Sunday as well, and that is coming from France.
It really, yeah. Well, if anybody in the industry will be aware that there's a major sale happening in Deauville this weekend, and that coincides with the racing as well. And Prix-Jacques Le Marois definitely is the highlight on Sunday. You've got Palace Pier in there facing, hoping for five Group 1s in a row. Poetic Flair, I just love the way Jim Bulger is campaigning this horse. He's running him, I think it's his sixth Group 1 run in 3 months. He's not afraid of anybody and he's full faith in his horse. Alpine Star, the filly that was second to Palace Pier in this race last year. She's a Group 1 winner in her own right when she won at Royal Ascot last year. She was beaten on her seasonal reappearance this year, which is a little bit concerning. But Jessica Harrington, her trainer, seems to be very confident. And Aidan O'Brien is Order of Australia in there as well, recent Minstrel Stakes winner. But realistically, Palace Pier is the horse they all have to beat. I am just really interested to see how he copes now with meeting a top drawer three-year-old like Palace Pier, having to give him weight. I've been dubious about the opposition that this horse has beaten in the past. He's looked brilliant doing it. By no uncertain terms, he's looked awesome doing it over a mile. But I think in Poetic Flair, he's got a real, real challenger on his hands. And I know a lot of the Irish horses or a lot of the Irish fans will be cheering that horse on.
And looking ahead to next week then, Jane, York Summer Festival kicks off on Wednesday and arguably the best race of the week comes on day one.
Yes, York is always it's almost a sign that the summer is coming to a close. Isn't that really sad? Because York is the main, it's probably the flagship August festival in the UK. And as ever, we are going to try and steal some sterling if we can. The Judmont International is the race over 10 furlongs where the three-year-olds take on the olders and we usually get a thrilling renewal. St. Mark's Basilica has been a leading light for Aidan O'Brien this year. He's been awesome. He won a French Guineas, he won a French Derby, and he came back and he beat Mishriff in the Coral Eclipse last time. Mishriff reopposes Alcohol Free, the recent Goodwood Sussex Stakes winner who actually beat Poetic Flair, is interesting for Andrew Balling because she steps up to 10 furlongs for the first time. Will she stay the trip on Pedigree? I'm not sure she will, but she's going to try. Mohafeth for Shadwell is in there and Jim Bulger runs Max Swinney, the Irish Guineas winner. But St. Mark's Basilica has looked a real star this year, and if he can continue his upward trajectory, this is the race in which to do it. The Yorkshire Oaks on Thursday then, that's Snowfall's race to lose on paper. She's been emphatic all this year. I'm not sure how strong the opposition are going to be when they take her on Thursday, but Snowfall so far has lit up the summer, which is a little bit contrary to her actual name. But for a lot of people who are fancying her for the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe in October, you would imagine this is the obvious next step. And the Nunthorpe Stakes on Friday is getting very hot and exciting because the US trainer Wesley Ward has raised a few eyebrows by saying Golden Pal, his recent winner in the US, he has said that this horse is the best horse he's ever trained. And considering this man has trained brilliant horses in the past, that's quite the statement. Golden Pal is going to have to back up that statement with a performance in Friday's Nunthorpe Stakes where he takes on Sueza, Dragon Symbol, Glass Slippers and the best European sprinters. But that's something we can't really ignore, especially from a trainer who specialises in speedy types.
Okay, very interesting, Jane. And if you were to give us a tip for the weekend?
I am going with Poetic Flair to turn around Palace Pier. Palace Pier looks rock solid, but I don't underestimate how good Jim Bulger's horse is. He was awesome in the St. James's Palace at Royal Ascot, and I hope if he gets his ideal conditions in France, the Jacques Le Marois might be coming home to Ireland.
Oh, very good. And Jane, just how is everything in Cork? Is it hurling fever big time down there?
Marie, you know very well that we're all trying to scramble to get a few tickets for this All-Ireland. It's a long time since we've had a day out in Croke Park, a real big day out, and I'll hold my hands up. I don't get to see much GAA because we're often at the racetrack, but I got the highlights from Sunday. My dad was a bit of a negative Nancy coming into the match. He was trying to play down our chances, but he's come out of it quite excited now. And anytime you beat Kilkenny is a good day at the pitch, and I know Limerick are going to be extremely difficult to beat, but it's got people around here very excited, and a lot of the GAA clubs as well. It's for a county that hasn't been there a long time. I grew up with the Dermot O'Sullivan, Donal Logue, Joe Dean, the O'Connor brothers era in Cork, where getting to the All-Ireland final was a regular thing. It's been a while since then, Marie.
I don't know if there's much sympathy around for you now, just given how successful you have been in the past, Jane. And will the Mangans be travelling?
There's one thing travelling and there's one thing getting in, so we're working on it. But either way, we're really looking forward to it, because it's something, I suppose, to get raises the spirits a bit, and a lot of people have got a pep in their step after watching last week's match. It's again, sport has that ability, doesn't it, to just raise your spirits and make people happy and get everybody chatting about something positive. There's nothing like it.
Well, I'll quote Ruby Walsh to finish: "It's a great distraction from reality," and he's dead right. Jay Mangan, thank you so much. Enjoy the weekend.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So the Premier League is upon us. Alan Cawley is with me in studio, and journalist Fergal Brennan joins me on the phone. Alan, it does feel like we haven't had football for a while, even though we had the Euros, but it is back. It's starting tonight with Arsenal and Brentford. Probably not the most glamorous fixture to get underway, but still, Arsenal are an intriguing outfit. I heard Mikel Arteta speaking in a press conference, and he already sounds like a man under pressure. And it was funny hearing him talking about having no fans for the time that he was in charge and how important they're going to be. And also the fact that he said they can't make excuses for what other clubs have. They have to find a way to get back into contention. And that is fair enough. But when you look at the players and you look at the business that other teams are doing and the business that he's doing, and the fact that his big star, Aubameyang, who looks like he's going to be out tonight as well as Lacazette due to injury, you'd have to wonder how he's going to be able to close that gap.
Yeah, I don't think he will, to be honest with you, Marie. And mainly for the reasons you outlined, but I just think the jury is very much out on Arteta as well. I think what bought him a lot of time last year was the fact that he won the FA Cup in his first season, which was bought him a fair amount of, I suppose, credibility with the supporters and with the fans, that they would kind of put up with certain things. I think he got off lightly the fact that there was no fans there last year, because some of the performances I seen had the fans been in the ground. And we all know how quickly the Arsenal fans can turn. And in fairness, they've probably turned too quickly at times. But certainly some of the performances last year, I thought were really, really poor. And as you say, you look at the business that they've done in the off-season, and it's not eye-catching by any means. Ben White has come in, 50 million. I think Ben White is a very good player. Is he worth 50 million? That's up for debate. But I do think he's a very good player, and he'll certainly add to Arsenal's squad. But that doesn't say much, because when you look at what he's adding to, it wouldn't take an awful lot, I don't think, to add. Certainly defensively, they've obviously lost Louise as well. It looks like they're going to keep a hold of Rob Holding that they're talking about. But that's the kind of level of player we're talking about, Marie. Like, that's not going to close the gap, as you say, on the big boys. And when you look at the level of business that the other teams are doing, I think it's going to be a tough season for Arsenal. And when you think last year as well, I think Leicester have overtaken. Like, we would have always seen the top six as the established Spurs, Arsenal, and then the top four, and everybody would have gone along with that. That's changed in recent years. I think Leicester have overtaken both Spurs and definitely Arsenal. So I think it's even harder for them now, and he has a serious job on his hands, Arteta.
Yeah, Fergal, and it's going to start with Brentford, really, because you know yourself, when a newly promoted team comes into the league, they want to make their mark.
Yeah, and tonight's game, as you said, it might not look the most exciting in terms of on paper. Brentford have never played in the Premier League before. They're a bit of an unknown quantity, in that sense. But all the cliches get rolled out on the opening week of the Premier League season. They've got nothing to lose. They're in a position where they just want to go out and make their mark. All the pressure's on Arsenal. All the old lines just get rolled out. But as Alan said, when it comes to Arsenal, these things tend to be painfully quite true because they do fit the narrative of generally falling short when they are under a bit of pressure, whether that's a newly promoted side that don't have any fear and can just go out and attack them and look to get a big result against them. They don't seem to really be able to react to any sort of a situation competently. And I agree with what you're saying. I think Arteta is already under pressure before a ball's even been kicked. The fans not being in the ground for the last 12 to 18 months has arguably helped him. Arsenal as a fan base are not the most loyal when it comes to backing managers. We've seen that, you know, in the final days of Arsene Wenger through Unai Emery and now into Arteta. So he's under big pressure. As for Brentford, it's difficult to kind of get a handle on how they're going to approach this season. Thomas Frank has been quite straight. He said they're not going to change a massive amount from how they did last season. They'll look to attack teams and break them down. And Ivan Toney, I was reading this morning, he's 31 goals in the Championship last season. Nobody's done that since, I think, 92 or 93. He's an absolute goal machine. Whether they'll be able to keep hold of him beyond this season remains to be seen, but they've definitely got him for this campaign and he's a hell of a prospect.
Alan Cawley, big day of sport tomorrow. Kicks off 12:30, Man United versus Leeds. What's your plan? Sitting on the couch for the day, starting with that?
My little fella has a football tournament tomorrow. But no, that'll be an absolute cracker. Man United and Leeds, I know firsthand the rivalry that's there. It's hatred. It's not rivalry. It's absolute hatred. When I was over there, it was actually scary some of the days, Marie, the hostility that was felt and the tension in that ground when Man United arrived Helen Road.
I think Roy Keenan, did you see his 50 questions for his 50th birthday, that the toughest ground he went to was Leeds, actually?
It was a dangerous place to be and a scary place to be. Brilliant atmosphere, but certainly in terms of a football team coming to play another football team, you'd never experience anything like it. Well, I certainly didn't. It was phenomenal, really. And that's what I say. It went far beyond rivalry. It was absolute hatred. Now, the one thing with the Leeds fans that I think it's brilliant, and it's brilliant now with Bielsa, and that they have a proper manager. He missed out on having the fans there last year, even though they performed really, really well. I think it's brilliant that the fans, because they're an unbelievable club, unbelievable fan base as well. They're an established Premier League team over the years. They're always a top flight team. It was a shame to see them drop out and where they went to. It's brilliant that they're back. And I do think that's going to be brilliant. Obviously, going against Man United, it's going to be a tough start for them. But I don't think that holds any fear for them. I don't think any team holds any fear for a Bielsa side. The approach we all saw last year, the way to play, can they deliver again on it this year? Because obviously sometimes the second season can be a little bit harder. There might have been a bit of a surprise element to them last year as well, and a lot of hype with them coming into the division. But I think the Canary, I don't think there's any worries whatsoever in terms of relegation. I think they'll perform similarly to what we saw last year. It's kind of boom or bust with them. It's all out attack. We love the approach that he has. Now, they played Man United in the game last year where they lost 6-2, and it was absolute carnage from their point of view, and he faced a lot of criticism in terms of how naive he might have been in that game. But he's not for changing, and he won't change for anyone, and he bounced back in obviously the games after that. So I think it'll be something similar tomorrow with the game. And I'm not mad on Man United, as you already know, Marie, in terms of Solskjaer and the whole bigger picture. Now they could win tomorrow, but certainly in terms of the bigger picture, you're probably going to ask us the question about winning the league and stuff. I don't think they'll win the league. So, but I'm certainly delighted, as I say, the fact that the Leeds fans are back for Bielsa, because he's a brilliant manager. He's brought a lot to the league, and I think that'll only enhance things for him tomorrow.
And Fergal, when you think of Solskjaer, you'd just want him to get his team settled early, because there were so many questions about whether or not he knew his best starting 11. But he's going in to the opening game of the season, and it turns out that Varane can't even play because the deal is not 100% done yet.
Yeah, he said that in his press conference this morning. United fans that I've spoken to are quite annoyed, quite frustrated. Is he lost? Is he caught in traffic? Is he what? Because it's been 3 weeks since they've announced the deal. He said his goodbyes in Madrid, and he's been in Manchester since. Obviously, there's a period of quarantine involved in that, but whatever sort of delays there's been on the paperwork, this is a real point of annoyance for Solskjaer, because he would have been planning to have him in the squad ready to play against Leeds tomorrow, probably going to start at the heart of the defence and get a bit of a measure of him in Premier League football. That's now not going to be the case. But once it is wrapped up, obviously Jadon Sancho coming in for, I think it was around 73, 74 million in the end, what Solskjaer now is facing this season is an idea that in the past maybe he wasn't given the huge amounts of sums of money that Manchester City were given or other Premier League teams were given. He's now been given it. He's made two very astute signings in Sancho and Varane. The task now for Solskjaer is not just to be getting to cup finals or just about getting into the top four. The challenge now is to actually go and win trophies, go and be a real challenger to City in the league title race. I agree with Alan. I still think they're a bit of a distance short, particularly right the way through the squad. I think they're lacking depth in some important areas. But the pressure is now on him. He's been wanting money. He's been wanting these big-name marquee signings to kind of kick them up another gear. The emphasis is on him now to meet those expectations and manage these star players into a silverware-winning unit.
Alan, another big game, and I know particularly you, as you've tipped them to win the league, will be watching, is Chelsea and Crystal Palace. No Lukaku yet. He's still not there. I think they're holding out the number 9 shirt for him. Tammy Abraham might be on the move, but it will be interesting to see what he has done, what Thomas Tuchel has done with his team since we last saw them play.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, we got a little bit of a glimpse of that in the Super Cup during the week, Marie, but certainly when it comes to the league, I think they will challenge, and I think they'll win the league. I think they'll definitely push Man City, and I think it's between those two. I kind of have Liverpool in the mix as well. Once all the players are fit, I'd worry slightly maybe about their depth if they do face one or two injuries. But certainly if they get their best 11 on the pitch, I think they're a match for anybody. But I do see it as a City Chelsea title race this year. And I think what changes for me is the signing of Lukaku. And that's the difference when you're throwing Man United into the mix as well. That was the area they needed to go out and get a top quality centre forward. City looks like they're going to get Kane. He's a game changer, as we all know. He'll end up getting 30-40 goals. Lukaku will do something similar with Chelsea. And that's the difference, Marie. At that top end of the pitch, when you already have the quality that they have behind him and the level of the quality of player, when you've someone like that that's going to guarantee you 25-30 goals, that's what's going to win you a league. So I definitely think Chelsea are going to be so strong. We already saw with Tuchel last year how good he was when he came in. I think he's a brilliant manager. Obviously they won again. They kept that momentum going with the Super Cup win during the week. I know it's only the Super Cup, but it just keeps the whole thing kind of ticking along nicely. And as I say, the signing of Lukaku I think pushes them on another little bit as well.
I wouldn't say to the Chelsea fans now it's only the Super Cup. They seem to really enjoy their few nights.
I was a little bit surprised by the players were going bananas as well, but look.
Fergal, okay, we do know strikers win leagues for teams, but centre-halves win leagues as well, and Virgil van Dijk is back and fit, and we'll be hoping that he will make his competitive return against Norwich at 5:30 on Saturday. He has signed a new deal till 2025, but look, when you think of Liverpool and the injuries that they've had, okay, Andy Robertson does have one at the moment, but they're nearly getting there when it comes to return to play.
Yeah, and that was the major issue for them last season. And I think Klopp and the players that were fit and completed the full season deserve a lot of credit, because if you think at the start of 2021, they had that miserable run where they couldn't win a game at Anfield. I think it was 6 or 7 games they didn't win, and there was talk of them dropping out of the top four, maybe even not qualifying for the Europa League. They rallied, they got it together, and all of that without Van Dijk and Joe Gomez as well. And Van Dijk is obviously so important. Joe Gomez, as his partner, dovetails really well with him. Anything that I've heard from Liverpool when we're doing kind of media stuff or press conferences, they're confident that the injury is not going to be a bit of a hangover, that he's back, he's fully fit. They made the decision collectively to not let him join up with the Netherlands for Euro 2020 and have that extra few weeks of a break. And I think it's a measure for me and for a lot of people that I've spoken to about this, that despite how good Ruben Dias was for Man City last season, and he got both the PFA player and I think got the Football Writers player as well, Van Dijk is still the best centre-back in the Premier League, and for me, he's the best centre-back in the world. Despite the fact he's missed the guts of an entire season, he still has that title. And Liverpool have still got such a strong team that you do get the sense that as soon as he's back, just the confidence and the assurance that he just radiates through that team, he allows the midfield to go 5 or 10 metres higher up, the forwards then to go a little bit higher up. They don't have to worry that they could just get caught on the break, because he's there, and he just gives that calmness to the entire team. And I agree with what Alan's saying. I think Lukaku coming in for Chelsea is absolutely massive. Werner, I wouldn't throw him on the scrap heap just yet, but it clearly hasn't quite worked for him yet. Lukaku brings that level of guarantee. Equally, Van Dijk at the other end of the pitch gives a completely different type of guarantee of, I guarantee we'll keep this amount of clean sheets, allowing the forwards to go and do their job and win the game.
Alan, what about Man City and Spurs on Sunday at 4:30? Harry Kane is adding a very interesting element to that game. We're not going to see him for Man City anyway at the weekend. Will we see him at all for Spurs?
I don't think we will, Marie, no. I'd be shocked if he plays, because I think this, I've said it numerous times, this is only a matter of time before this happens. I'd say it will happen during the week. I think they're probably just trashing out a deal at the moment, and of course we all know what Daniel Levy will be like when it comes to negotiating a deal. So I don't think he'll play at the weekend. I'm interested to see about City, because as I say, it'll be them or Chelsea, I think, that are going to win the league. The signing of Grealish is absolutely huge. I know it's a lot of money, but I don't think that the money is not his fault, to be fair to the lad. He's an unbelievable talent, an unbelievable player. I think he'll even get better going under the likes of Guardiola. And this is what I mean, Marie, about even going back to the stuff with Solskjaer. And it's not a criticism on him in the sense that we all know he was a brilliant player and he's probably a great fella and all that kind of stuff. But there's levels. And Guardiola, Klopp, Tuchel, that's the level, and they'll get the best and even more out of the likes of a Grealish or the players that they sign. Solskjaer's just not at that level, so you're trying to get the best out of the players that he has. I just don't think that's going to happen, but certainly with the Grealish thing, I'm so interested to see how he does, how he fits him in as well, and where he plays him. It'll be really interesting, because we've only ever really seen him as kind of the left of a front three with Villa. He's played a little bit of midfield as a number eight as well. I think Guardiola may try to carve him into that kind of a position, like what he's done with a De Bruyne. And if you have the likes of a Fernandinho or a Rodri sitting there, and you have De Bruyne and Grealish either side of him, with maybe Sterling, Kane and Mahrez and Foden, like it's frightening for the rest of them. But I am really interested to see what Guardiola does with him and how he utilises him.
Big time, agree with you, Al. Now, I know you have predicted Chelsea to win the league. Fergal, who do you think is going to get there?
It's City for me. I think Chelsea will run them right to the wire, but I think Grealish coming in adds another level, makes them even more unpredictable. The names that Alan's just listed off there would be enough to win you the league in a normal situation. But Kane is the key one, in the same way Lukaku for Chelsea. They've lost Aguero. Yes, he's had injury problems in the last 12 months and he's not been the force that he once was. But if you've got all these incredible players that can create chances and just scatter defences, and then you've got Kane who just guarantees that amount of goals, that level of performance, it just drives them on. I don't think Chelsea will be too far behind, but they've got such strength in depth. And if, probably when Kane comes in, he just says, listen, you create the chances, I'll stick them away. And we can potentially, if it all clicks together, we can just sweep the board.
Yeah, well, one thing is for sure is that Pep is not going to let what happened at the start of last season happen again. They are not going to start as slowly as they did. He will have learned for that. That is all we have time for here, Fergal Brennan. Thank you so much, Alan Cawley. Enjoy the football tournament tomorrow. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Blana Tracy is up next.
Live across the nation, this is RTE 2FM.